Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 19. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Maya Javani Kachanam Agyadokshajam Avyayam. Nalakshyase mudha drisha nato natyadaro yata. Maya deluding javanika curtain. Achanam covered by. Agya ignorant. Adoksajam beyond the range of material conception transcendental. Avyayam irreproachable, not, lakshyase, observe, mudha drisha, by the foolish observer, nataha, artist, natyadara, just as a play, yata, as. Translation, being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor, covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So I'm going to read the purport. It'll probably take about 5 minutes. Those of you can follow on. The others, just try to listen attentively. It's sometimes just difficult to hear reading. I'm not very good myself at hearing when things are just read, but it'll give us that potency. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna affirms that less intelligent persons mistake him to be an ordinary man like us, and thus they deride him. The same is confirmed herein by Queen Kunti. The less intelligent persons are those who rebel against the authority of the Lord. Such persons are known as asuras. Asuras cannot recognize the Lord's authority. When the Lord himself appears among us as Ram, the Sringa Varaha, or in his original form as Krishna, he performs many wonderful acts which are humanly impossible. As we shall find in the 10th canto of this great literature, Lord Sri Krishna exhibited his humanly impossible activities even from the days of his lying on the lap of his mother. He killed the Putana witch, although she smeared her breast with poison just to kill the Lord. The Lord sucked her breast just like a natural baby, and he sucked out her very life also. Gajendra, out. Out. Do this for me. Just get the dog out of here. Sorry. It's okay, Dorita, you take care of the dog. Similarly, he lifted Govardhan Hill just as a boy picks up a frog's umbrella and stood several days continuously just to give protection to the residents of Vrindavan. These are some of the superhuman activities of the Lord described in the authoritative Vedic literatures like the Puranas, Itihasyas, and Upanishads. He has delivered wonderful instruction in the shape of the Bhagavad Gita. He has shown marvelous capacity as a hero, as a householder, as a teacher, as a renouncer. He is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such authoritative personalities as Vyas, Devala, Asit, Narada, Madhva, Shankar, Ramanuja, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and all authorities of the line. He himself is declared as much in many places of the authentic literatures. And yet there is a class of men with the demoniac mentality who are always reluctant to accept the Lord as the supreme absolute truth. This is partially due to their poor fund of knowledge and partially due to their stubborn obstinacy, which results from various misdeeds in the past and present. Such persons cannot recognize Lord Sri Krishna even when he was present before them. Another difficulty is that those who depend more on their imperfect senses cannot realize him as the Supreme Lord. Such persons are like the modern scientists. They want to know everything by their experimental knowledge. But it is not possible to know the Supreme Person by imperfect experimental knowledge. He is described herein as a Dokshaja, or beyond the range of experimental knowledge. Okay, I'm going to stop there and then I'll read the rest later. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmalatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Shyam Ashram in Cali, Colombia. I'm sitting on the porch. What beautiful trees and plants they have here. It's really wonderful. Today it's relatively quiet. We don't have classes on Sunday, although I will be giving a Krishna Katha at 10 o'clock. And last week I gave the class before Kali Yuga Fest, and I'll just give a couple of minutes. Share you with that. It was really beyond their expectations. We had 400 people come. So it's just like any other activity, it becomes branded after a while. And we charge. It costs a lot to put it on, and we charge a considerable amount. So it's about 280 people paying, and then the rest for free, or people that are working or doing service, but it was really great. We had five different areas on our property. We had a huge tent with a wood floor, like a really high-end tent. And then we have our own temple room yoga studio. And then we have another yoga shala. And then one of the houses was emptied out, and then a big tree. And I sat under the big tree that was the Swami area answering questions. And then in our temple, I gave class. And after the class, I said there'll be a person back there with a board. You can sign up for Monday morning greetings in Spanish, which is now translated. We had 55 people from that class sign up. And we ended up with a fire yoga at the end in our big tent. And the fire yoga was done by Atul, who went to the Mayapur Gurukul for about 15 years. And Yadaraj, who's from Kali and was visiting. So we had the authentic. And Jai Jagannath doing the kirtan. So there is a tremendous field here. for sharing Krishna consciousness. And my particular mission here was to make a template for preaching Krishna consciousness to more established people in society. That was my template here. So it's going quite well. And now we'll get to this story, which is quite significant. So this is the eighth chapter of the Bhagavatam. And in the seventh chapter, Krishna was finally introduced, because it's Suta Goswami answering these questions about the Bhagavatam. So he's telling about the Bhagavatam, but we don't actually have yet the vision of Krishna. And when he's telling about the Bhagavatam, I mentioned this so many times, but I can do it briefly. The sages of Naimisharanya had heard about the Bhagavatam, and they wanted to know about the three main protagonists, the three main characters in manifesting and propagating the Bhagavatam, and that's Vyasadev, Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Prickett. So the seventh chapter began to answer the questions about Maharaj Prickett, because Maharaj Prickett, his story is so fascinating. He's perfect in his birth, he's perfect in his life, and he's perfect in his death. And actually, Krishna appears before him in his death, but indirectly. It says, in your death, if you're surrounded by the devotees, that's a manifestation of Krishna. But more than that, Krishna appeared in the Bhagavatam to him. And not only appeared in the Bhagavatam to him, but his death was the facility for Krishna in the form of the Bhagavatam to appear in Kali Yuga, because the last question that the sages of Naimisharanya asked is, now that Krishna has left the planet, where is knowledge and religion? And he said, the Bhagavatam. And how does it appear? It appears to Maharaj Prickett. So his whole story is actually going to be told practically now to the end of the Bhagavatam, because his death, then the Bhagavatam manifests in the form of his guru, Sukadeva Goswami, answering his questions, what is the duty of a man who is about to die and what should he not do? Which, you know, the initial answer to that was Viriyan Asha Te Prashta, Prashna Krita Loka Hitam Napa, that question is so glorious. It's the most important question. It's the most important question. You have to deal with that. Ultimately, you have to deal with that. And ultimately, it means whatever process of self-improvement and transformation and things that you're on, unless it leads to a platform of transcendence, which means an awakening of the soul, unless it's actually religious or really deeply spiritual, then shrama evahi kevalam, it has no value. Even dharma svanushtita pumsa viviksena katasya no pariye yati ritim sam. Dharma svanushtita, done svanushtita, perfect. It doesn't have much value. It doesn't have much value unless it yadi ritim, it gives you rati, it gives you attraction. So that's really where things have to lead, to a point of transcendence. Ultimately, that's why in the Gita, the last qualities of knowledge mentioned are janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, doshana, darshanam. That one who's intelligent, he sees dukkha, doshanam, darshanam. He sees darshanam, dukkha, that the real fault in material existence the real fault of material existence is birth, death, disease, and old age. Whatever you're doing, it has to lead to solving those problems. And you can only solve those problems by self-realization, because those problems are an illusion when you are in ignorance of the self. The self is eternal, but when you're in ignorance, what does ignorance mean? The Yoga Sutra says, what is ignorance? It's when one thinks that the temporary that the temporary suffering, impure body is the eternal soul, the eternal, blissful, fully cognizant soul. So, well, anyway, so the story of Maharaj Prickett's there. And where does the story of Maharaj Prickett begin? Where's his birth begin? Where's his story begin? It begins on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because he's the last surviving member of the dynasty. And he's in the womb of his mother. And then Ashwatthama is to throw the Brahmaspur weapon to kill him. And his mother, Uttara, who's a great devotee, Krishna, Krishna, by protect me, Krishna. And then Krishna appears in the womb to Maharaj Prickett. And he's therefore named Prickett. Prickett means examiner. He's searching for that good impression. You search for good the good mind has good impressions, which means we're attracted to good things and we're averse to bad things. And those are created by samskaras. Impressions are created by the experiences we have in life in the past, but especially when we're young. So he saw Krishna when he was young in the very womb. And that contact with God, that's our faith. Because that contact with God is a feeling of love, because it's a relationship with God. So when you actually have that contact, that's the basis of our faith. And that's how people come. God is merciful to them, and God appears to them. He appears to them in the form of the holy name or the book or the devotees, and they have an experience. But anyway, what this story is that he, and that's when we see Krishna. And then the war is over and Krishna is about to leave. And then we get introduced to the real essence of the Bhagavatam. And that's our relationship with Krishna. And we're introduced to that in the Bhagavatam by seeing people's love for Krishna. And this love will be profound, because we'll see the love for Krishna when people are leaving. And therefore, there's this feeling of separation. So now Krishna is leaving. So we're going to follow Krishna. Now, all of a sudden, Krishna is introduced. This is the essence of the Bhagavatam. And we'll follow Krishna, and he's leaving Hastinapur, and then he's entering Dwarka. And you see the affection of the devotees for Krishna. And that's what we are searching for, because everyone, ultimately, they may be searching for so many things, but ultimately we're searching for pleasure, and pleasure is love, and the highest love is universal love, which means when you love God. And when you love God, that's the love of everything. It's not just a love directed and inspired by a particular object. It's a love that wells in the heart in relationship with God. Prema Pumartha Mahan, and that is Maha Artha. That is the greatest wealth. The greatest wealth is that love in the heart. And that love in the heart is an energy of Krishna. It's also our nature to serve. And when we have an intense desire to serve Krishna out of love, and that voice in the heart becomes all-consuming, it really attracts Krishna's mercy. Krishna now becomes confident. That's the heart I can rest in. Chakva Sarva Asha, because there's no other agenda. When Krishna saw the wives of the Brahmins, they finally came to see him, and he saw their hearts. And I explained many times, that's really what the darshan of the deity is. The darshan of the deity is our service to the deity. And what's our service to the deity? The service to the deity is our hearts. That's our service. Our service is love. Without love, there's not really service. So if we really want to please Krishna, we have to develop love. We have to develop love. And the first way in which we develop that love is that we appreciate that love. I often quoted the French philosopher Voltaire, that which we appreciate comes to us. Prabhupada said we advance by appreciation. So when we hear and we see the beauty of the ultimate love, then by God's grace we'll aspire for it. That's why it's so important to read the Bhagavatam, because that's what it's about. It's a demonstration of this love to give us the proper faith or goal to aspire for. So now here, an interesting thing happens. So then Krishna is to leave, and then Kunti Dev comes out, and Kunti Dev is his aunt, and she has a very intimate relationship with Krishna, and she's the aunt, and the aunt gives blessings. The aunt gives affection. The aunt doesn't see their young child and start to offer prayers and pay obeisances. The child would be completely bewildered. The child doesn't want respect. The child doesn't want respect from the aunt. The child wants affection. And affection flows downwards. So if you want affection, you have to be in an inferior position. Love flows two ways. Above is respect. Downwards is affection. They're both equally beautiful love. But if you are in a relationship where you are getting affection, like the niece or the nephew, you don't want your aunt to start walking in and paying obeisances to you and start offering prayers to you. But all of a sudden, Queen Kunti begins to do this. And she begins to offer prayers. to Krishna as God, because somehow at the end of the war, Krishna saves Uttar. Kunti's there, and he sees Krishna entering into the womb of Uttara, and Krishna saving this and saving that and saving this and saving that. And she becomes in awe. And her intimacy melt is not, because melt usually means there's more. Look, Lance Armstrong is here, the famous, what? Tour de France. No, I just had to make a joke here. I'll let you know the joke, but Sri Govinda and Shyam Sundari just cycling is like the national pastime of Colombia. You go on the street, everybody's cycling, but they're not just cycling. They got these uniforms on. So Sri Govinda and Shyam Sundari, they're decked out in these uniforms and these big things. They come in and just like they took off. Okay, now what was my last point? So I have an audience here today. Oh yeah, okay, so melt is not exactly the right term, because melt almost appears like it's becoming more intimate. But melt is used in this term that their intimacy with Krishna is not exactly completely solid, because it can change into reverence. They can become overpowered by reverence. And that is not a bad feeling. Whereas the residents of Vrindavan, their mood of intimacy is solid, in the sense that it can never change or be moved. And Vishwanath Rupa Goswami gives an analogy. He said, if you have gold in ghee, if the ghee melts, you can see the gold. If the ghee doesn't melt, you can't see the gold. So he said, the love of the residency of the residents of Mathura and Dwarka, it's like the ghee that melts and you can see the gold. But what do they see? They see Krishna's opulence. They see Krishna's opulence. But the residents of Vrindavan, they never see it. And even if Krishna tells them, and the coward boys, they see him lifting, killing demons, and I think he's God. In the assembly once, Krishna killed so many demons that Upananda, Nanda Maharaj said, I think he is God. I think, and Nanda Maharaj started laughing. He said, you think he's the absolute truth? He just speaks lies. You think he's the supreme controller? He passes stool and urine everywhere. The absolute truth. But sometimes Krishna, even he goes and he tells his mother, Mom, I have something to tell you. I remember when Mahamuni first came with me out of high school. So I must know him out of 20 years. He was coming out of high school before he was going to college, and he came to Vrindavan. He attended the VIHE and he became a devotee. And then he said, and devotee at that time meant you joined the temple. So he said, what am I going to tell my mother? I said, well, your mother's, Catholic, right? Yeah. Or something like that. So tell her like this, Mom, how Jesus became inspired and gave everything to God? I think I'm one of those people. I think. So Krishna said, you know, I'm God. She got so upset with him, right? You're claiming to be God, you rascal. If you ever say that again in the house, you're punished. You're punished. And then Balaram saw Krishna tied up. The mother punished him. Tied him up to the grinding mortar. So Balaram was really upset. He was gonna untie it. And the friend said, no, don't untie it. Mother Yasoda was punishing him. So he went to Mother Yasoda. And said, you know, don't tie up Krishna. Don't you understand that he's an incarnation of God? And I'm also an incarnation of God. And Mother Yasoda laughed. She said, what? Incarnations of God only live in my house? She grabbed a stick. And then Balaram called 911. No, I'm joking. But they can't. Krishna lifting up Govardhan Hill. Mother Yasoda is feeding him, thinking he's getting tired. The coward boys, say, let us hold it for a while. And they always think it's God, it's Narayan, it's so. It never can cover that Madhurya. But even with Queen Kunti, it's only temporary. She's so inspired. Because her primary bhav, her primary mood is intimacy. It's motherly. It's affection. But somehow or other, it's not Vrindavan. So the opulence of Krishna in the thick ghee of her relationship become melted by the Aishwarya Bhav, by the opulence and the potency of Krishna. So she, and Krishna's kind of bewildered, why is she doing this? But she's just inspired, and she offers these prayers, which are classic prayers in Shastra. Bowing down to the supreme controller, the Ishvara. And the point now in these two verses is very interesting, is that you're invisible. It means you're not seen easily. People can't recognize you in this form. So the analogy, again, it's God. He's a young boy. He's God. He's your God. But you're invisible. I think it said sarvabhutanam. You're invisible to all living entities. You're invisible. Because you appear in Naralila, in just an ordinary, not ordinary, but not in Aishwarya, not in majesty. It's so not in that great power. And that's a point also that I always explain, and something that I really think about deeply is the fullness of being is in intimacy and not majesty. Because when you take a position, it covers your personality. So almost counterintuitively, the fullest manifestation of God is when he's in intimacy. And intimacy means he can't be majestic, because majestic is very, very distant. And that's why it's so significant that the first time that we see Krishna both in the Gita and the Bhagavatam, is in the same place as the chariot driver of Arjuna. So Krishna, the whole essence of the Bhagavatam is Ete Chamsa Kalapun Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna is Swayam. He's a full manifestation of God. So when we see the full manifestation of God, he's in the position of the driver. And really the driver. When Arjuna has to get down from the chariot, Krishna, you know, puts his hand out when he has to get on Krishna. And then Krishna, ties the horses and goes out to the field. And, you know, and then like a driver, he's washing the chariot. Arjuna, yeah, is my friend. And my, you know, when you're a friend, you can take the position of service. He's my friend and he's serving me like this. But in doing that, that nature of being, I love our conception of God as Akhila Rasamrita Murti, because we all know that even in our own experience, our fullness is in love. What we really are is in relationship. What we really are is in relationship. When you know someone, and this is the essence of bhakti, when you know something, someone, they reveal themselves to you. So when you know God, when you love God, he reveals himself to you. And what does he reveal? He reveals his relationship with you. God is your friend. God is your lover. God is your master. God is your child. And that's the whole essence of the Krishna consciousness movement. That type of love that is unchecked by a sense of reverence, obligation, fear, distance. When it's unchecked, it's much more forceful. Do you think Krishna likes more for his aunt to have this superior position of affection, or he likes when his aunt puts him in a high position and offers prayers? So that's the fuller nature of the Supreme. And it's the essence of our teachings. It's what Lord Chaitanya came to give. It's why Krishna appeared. Krishna appeared to taste that type of love. And he appeared to give that type of love. And Lord Chaitanya appeared to taste that type of love and give that type of love. So this is the real essence of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to aspire for and hanker for an intimate relationship with God, but not in a cheap way, because it takes some bandhagyan. Because the first thing you have to do is not offend God, and you're going to offend God if you think you are God, and you're going to offend God if you think God is material. And you're going to offend God if you think there's no God. So there has to be some preliminary understanding of God to keep the mood of service. Because the mood of, I'm just going to show you, we have a big, beautiful thoroughbred horse here on the property called Kulpaviksha. We imported the horse from New Jersey. No. And the dogs are named Gajendra and Rohini. And the parrots are named Leela. Okay, something like that. And, you know, the beautiful thing about prayers, the beautiful thing about prayers it helps create the consciousness by which you can see God. We're covered from our perception of God by our false ego. When you think you are the center, you can't see who is. That's why when we go to the holy Dhams, we worship Lord Shiva. He's Digpal, he protects the Dham. We worship Lord Shiva in Dhameshwara, Kundeshwara, Kameshwara, Gopeshwara. Digpal protects because he's presiding deity of the false ego. And if you have that consciousness, you can't recognize God. So prayers put one in a humble position. And they attract mercy. Because what attracts mercy is the sincerity of need. That's what attracts mercy. The sincerity of need. Sometimes you want to give a donation, like you see poor people, you know, you're in New York. You know, is it just a scam or the person really needs? That's, you know. And if the person really needs, actually people need, but they don't understand they need. Because the hole in our heart is love. The hole in our heart is love. And we're trying to fill it with so many other things. But we need that connection with God. And people don't realize it. Because as soon as you want it, you get it. Our distance from God is only our consciousness. I'm remembering things that I spoke about in Gaur Lila, where Lord Chaitanya's, where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a big logician. He doesn't understand that Lord Chaitanya is God. But his sister's brother, Gopinathacharya, is a big devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And Gopinathacharya is watching his brother-in-law deal with Lord Chaitanya. And then finally he looks at him and says, even though the Supreme Personality of Godhead is standing right before you, you cannot see him because you think of yourself as a separate, independent God. So consciousness affects perception. So seeing is not just the senses, it's your attitude. We project so many things on what we see. It's not that what we see comes into the consciousness purely, it's filtered through the mind. And therefore we may have prejudice. So we don't see what's before us, but we see what we think is before us based on maybe a previous experience or based on some misconception, based on some education we had, right? Like someone with a shaved head and a dhoti and, you know, you can look at him and think, this is a clown, this is a crazy person, what is he, you know? Or you can look, oh, this is a Vaishnava. So is it the senses? It's also a question of our knowledge that enables us to see. What to speak when you are dealing with person? It's a question of revelation. When you deal with a person, you can only see a person to the extent that that person opens their heart to you. So all these ways, God remains invisible. Nahampakasya sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. That verse is paraphrased right in this purport here. I'm not manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. So it's consciousness that separates us from God. That's what bhakti is. Bhakti is developing our desire for God by becoming attracted to God, by hearing about God in the Bhagavatam, by chanting God's name, by serving God. And we can see the struggle we have because from time immemorial, we have been doing the opposite. So we have some scars. We have impressions that are attracted to other things, like someone who's addicted to cocaine or something. They mistakenly think that this is happiness, and they prioritize it over a loving relationship with their spouse, over a loving relationship with their children, over a loving relationship. You can't compare love, even in a material sense, to sensual stimulation. So here she says, he's looking at her nephew. And there's something beautiful about that. You know, you mix in the Aishwarya with the Madhurya. In other words, it's my nephew is God. But her experience now she's in a mood of reverence, which is a beautiful thing. It's just like that solid ghee and the liquid ghee. It's both ghee. Right? One is more solid than the other. So they're both love. It's different shades of love, different flavors of love. But she's saying most people cannot see you as God, not because they have an intimate relationship with you, but they can't see you as God because they're envious of you. They can't see you as God because they're ignorant of you. But beyond that, you are perfect and you're just covered like an actor on a stage. There's a person there that you can't see because he's playing something else. So she's taking a very humble position. I'm in need. I don't know. And therefore, that type of position, you can understand God because you put yourself in the proper position to do so. So it's, at, again, that's almost counterintuitive. In one sense, no. I'm unqualified. And that becomes the qualification. Or mercy, which is the vehicle by which God reveals himself, and which is the vehicle which any person reveals himself. If a person is beautiful and wonderful, etc., the way to understand that is in relationship. So that's why, what is it? Bhaktimam abhijanati. Only by bhakti can you understand God. Okay, are there any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail,
hi, Krishna Maharaj. I think my question is, you know, how do you know if whether you are confusing the hole in your heart for love for something material or something spiritual. And I'm saying that, you know, for a person who doesn't want any temporary filling of the heart, so it's not that, you know. you recognize that the hole in your heart is the hole is love, and you don't want it to be filled with something temporary, but is it possible to confuse that with a desire for something that's actually material?
Okay, let me paraphrase your question for the people here. That's Gail. Did you meet Gail? No. Okay. All right. Question she's asking is, someone may have a hole in their heart and is hankering for something material. Let me see if I got this right, Gail. They're hankering for something material, and you're saying, and if they approach God, how do they know that it's not just seeking that and not God?
Yeah, how do you know whether what you're seeking is actually spiritual and not material? You don't want it to be filled with something temporary.
In relationship to God.
Yeah, you think you're looking for God, but, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe you're trying to fill that hole of love, you know, but maybe it's material. Is there some kind of litmus test?
Are you talking about when you're searching, you have a hole in the heart, now you realize that will be filled in relationship to God. Then you're saying, well, how do I know that that's a real feeling and not just a material feeling projected? Is that what you're asking?
In one sense,
it doesn't matter because you're approaching God. And, you know, even if our motives are mixed, we'll be purified of that. Just like Dhruva Maharaj wanted a planet greater than his grandfather, Lord Brahma. It was material, but he approached God. So we are searching for God. That is the real thing that we're looking for, you know. So when we search for God, it may be mixed. Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukhitana Jana Atarti Jig. There's four types of people that approach Krishna, and sometimes they have motive. Right? They have a motive for approaching Krishna. So it may be mixed. You know, you may have a philosophical understanding that this is right. You may have an emotional. Well, in one sense, it's spiritual. You have an emotional need that's not being filled. On one level, that emotional need may be a real emotional need that you need to satisfy to be peaceful. But ultimately, the only satisfaction is if it's connected to God. And then it becomes eternal. So you can't lose approaching God. Akama sarva karma va moksha karma udharadi tivrena bhakti yogena. That whether you have akama sarva karma va, whether you have akama, you have no desires, sarva karma, you have all desires, moksha karma, you desire liberation. If you approach Krishna, your jati purushambhur, then you're going to be purified. So the only question you're asking, Gail, is really, we're all mixed. We don't start at purity. So we have our motives, but we also have our sincerity. Okay, Gail, does that help?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello or ask a question? Either one. Would you like to
Hare
say
Krishna.
Hello or ask a? Okay.
Hare Krishna, Gumaraj.
Hi, Bo.
Gopinath here.
Tota Gopinath. Okay, great. Who else?
Maharaj, it's Betty. I have a question.
Okay, Betty.
So, is that hole ever really filled? I mean, when you get to the point where all you think about is God, but you still feel like the hole is there. I mean, when does it get filled? When do you realize that you ever really get there?
Well,
or is it something that's there purposely, so that you're always thinking about it?
No, I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to say no. She wants to know, will we ever get there and fill the heart? First, let me say yes, because our eternal relationship is with Krishna. Others are temporary. And I'm not discounting temporary relationships. Their souls, seeing the relationship to God and connecting it, and some kind of fulfillment. But on the ultimate platform, prema means you are filled. Sandrandana visheshatma. It's like a piece of iron you can't put a pin through. Your love is so thick. So it's satisfying, but at the same sense, love is a hunger. So the more you have, the more you want. So, but that's on a transcendental platform. You're always satisfied, but you never become satiated. Because if you become satiated, then you won't be satisfied. So the nature of prema is one thinks he doesn't have that love. Because it's a hunger for God. And when the desire increases, you just want more. But somehow or other, you're full. You're full. And, you know, the modern world, our path to devotion is something else. Because in the modern world, the relationships are not so satisfying. It's like a karma. Very few, you know, we have a few relationships here and there and things like that. But that's also an advantage because in the Bhagavatam, it always talks about household life and the impediment and the painstaking life of the sannyasis, the renounced, and, you know. And it really was because it was because the material life in a better karmic situation was much nicer. Well, you know, you didn't have to worry about your whole life. It was all set up for you, the whole society. You just moved through it, you know, and young and married and young in career and young in where you're going to live and young in who your guru is. And all these things are settled. But on the other hand, there's also a danger to that you become satisfied with something that is not happiness. And we're actually talking about that. I gave a seminar in Karma here. And I was surprised. I mean, after the Kali Yoga Fest, and we had Jai Jagannath Friday Night Kirtan. And then today, there's so many programs. I'm here. And then tomorrow, farewell. So I was giving a class on Karma, and I explained, why is Karma like fair? Because we're not happy and we have to change. And Krishna has to institute that change. And even if you have all those things, you're not happy. Happiness is something eternal. You maybe have some satisfaction, but for what? For that connection, for that ultimate connection. So until you get that ultimate connection, you'll never be fully satisfied, and God will have to send things to turn up the heat so you won't get stuck. Some people get stuck. That's why Kali Yuga is so great. You don't get stuck in your material situation. It never is like, therefore, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, it says devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those people who are devoid of false prestige. And therefore, the Kali Yuga is such a good time. Okay, thank you, Betty.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Hemala Darada from Argentina.
Hemala Darada. Yay. All your friends are here watching the class. Gloria's here. Henu's here. Dorit is here. Okay. Okay.
Greetings to everyone, please.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Thank you for wonderful classes. Love Govinda.
Okay, Love Govinda. Raji Sundari Radha. What a name. I wonder who thought of it. Anyway, okay. Next. Who else? Someone else say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Kishori Radha.
And Priya.
Priya, Hare Bo. I'm looking for, I'm counting the days for two Sundays. Is it three Sundays or two Sundays? Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Sri Rupa.
Sri Rupa, I got the itinerary there when you're going to be in Vrindavan and Mayapur. And
wonderful.
I will make sure I'm in both places at the same time.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it so much.
Now we're going to show you a very good time. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Jai Kishori.
Jai Kishori, Hare Bo. Anybody else?
Hare Bo. Jai Krishna Guru Maharaj, the Golden Bhagavad.
Hare Bo, Govardhan. Hare Bo. More? I'm an exceptionally go. Okay, sure. I'm in such a relaxed mood here in this, I don't know if you call it tropical paradise, but I couldn't be more relaxed than sitting on this porch of this hacienda in the perfect weather with Kulpa Vriksha to my left. And I don't know, it's just beautiful. Cool breeze coming. Yeah. Okay. Who else? What an enjoyer I am. My God. Anybody else say hello? Okay. We'll end here then. All right, Bill.